There we go. All right, let's move into our next hour. And we've got an interesting subject we're going to tackle here, because if I think about our neighborhood, I think about small towns, rural areas, farmland, mountains, central PA, and of course we could go further than that, northern PA, so the so-called northern tier, which is even more rural and filled with some cases very small towns. And yet we've covered this on the show from time to time, that there are some parts of our state that are struggling right now. I mean, in various ways, either population, business, money opportunities, and that sort of thing. This is a tough stretch. Sometimes this gets thrown into the political realm. Then politicians talk about it, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. We're going to forget about those folks. But one question is, all right, is it always going to be that way? Are there some things we can do differently to rejuvenate towns or areas or, you know, small business and stuff like that? And I think the answer is yes. And I came across a group recently and I thought, I want to talk to them, because that sounds like a very interesting subject. So let's introduce to our program Becky McCray. All right, first off, Becky, good morning and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Good morning. I'm excited to talk with you, and I have a great love for Pennsylvania, having visited your northern tier and worked with some small towns there.
Oh, great. Love all it. Right. Then this is going to be absolutely timely. All right. Now, a little backstory here. This is Scott. I get so many email newsletters, probably too many. I get a ton. And there was this one I read recently, and I thought, it mentioned Becky, it mentioned you by name and your what you do, and I'm like, oh, hey, there's a really good subject. And your website, which is saveyour.town. And Becky, I'll be honest, I guess I wasn't familiar with the dot town. I didn't even know there was a dot town. All right, .com, .org, okay, fine. .town is one I'm not familiar with. So we want to talk about your website in a little bit. First off, let's get some information about you, if you would. Tell us your background, where you're from. You're not from PA. And this basic idea that you and your partner are working on right now. Tell us about yourself.
Absolutely. I am in rural Oklahoma. I am in a town called Hopeton, which is population 30 people. We're expecting a new family, so it's going to be 33. We're very excited. We're going to get a 10% increase of population there.
All right.
My background is as an entrepreneur and as a cattle rancher with my husband. And I have worked probably about 12 years as a retail business owner. I have been a small town city administrator for a town of about 993 people. I've worked as a nonprofit executive. I've been a volunteer in my own community. And in 2006, I started writing about small towns and small businesses online. And then in 2015, I created the Survey of Rural Challenges because I wanted to know from rural people all over, not just my corner of the world, what their challenges were, what their assets were, and what they were doing in their communities and their businesses. And we've had over 2,000 responses from 2015 all the way through. It's open right now, Survey of Rural Challenges, open through the end of June. That has really expanded my understanding of what rural communities from the U.S. and Canada and also from Australia face, as well as what we're doing right. And in 2015, Deb Brown and I started SaveYour.Town. Deb gets full credit for coming up with the name, SaveYour.Town, and the website address that goes with it. And our goal is to help small towns and rural communities thrive.
So it sounds like, Becky, in your town, more cattle than people.
There are 10 times as many cattle as people in my county.
Whoa, okay. Now, I must admit, I've never been to Oklahoma. I know where Oklahoma City is. I know where Tulsa is. Where are you in regards to, I guess, the bigger cities in Oklahoma?
Oklahoma kind of looks like a ball cap that's been turned upside down.
Yeah.
You know, we've got that panhandle sticking out to the side. I'm not in the panhandle, but I am as close to the panhandle as you can get there's like one more county between us and the Panhandle. So I'm up far north, almost to Kansas, and far west, not quite in the Panhandle.
Okay.
This is very rural prairie country. I'm looking out my front window at a field full of hay bales, and out my back window is another wheat field, and so it's definitely pretty sparsely populated.
Well, I know here in Pennsylvania, Becky, this is Scott, I've got a few acres, and the first cut of hay has been very productive because we've had our share of rain this spring. Now, I don't know, every time, I guess when I think weather in Oklahoma, I just think tornadoes. I don't know, because that's what makes the news, tornadoes. You don't, God forbid, you don't have those, do you?
You know, in my entire life, and all the time I've lived here, I've seen one only, and I am well over 50, so they're not that, you know, the big problem we're facing right now is drought, so if you've had your share of the rain, send some more over to us.
I wish we could sometimes, although, you know, we've had not flooding or anything, but more than enough. All right, now your website again, and folks, check this out, it's saveyour.town. Becky, for folks that haven't checked it out here in the last 2 minutes, tell us about this website. What is on there?
Well, we start with the presumption that we believe that small towns can best be saved by their own people using their own assets and resources. So what we provide on that website, there are videos and short courses. There are free articles, and there are some free videos as well. We do some webinars occasionally on key topics like housing, working together, and we have one coming up that's about connecting with place. And it's really about providing the resources that are practical steps that can be put into action right away. And it's based around, we call it the idea-friendly method, less formality, less overhead, no more committees, no more meetings, no more plans, but just small and meaningful participation by everyone possible. So you gather your crowd around your big idea, you build connections to find what you need, and then you take small steps. And if you can do it that way, then you don't need another plan, and you don't need another committee, and you don't have to have a task force if you can just go do it in small steps.
Becky, you had me at no more committees.
Amen.
Why do we do that, though? It's just when a bunch of people, and especially governmental-type people, get together, well, we need to have a committee on this. In all your experience, Becky, why do we always fall back on that, and then it turns into a slog, and nothing seems to get done? I don't understand. Do you know where that comes from? Why do we fall back on that stuff?
You know, Deb asked me that, like, why? Why are we like this? And it's the railroad. I went and researched this. The railroads introduced the organizational chart and vastly increased the use of the telegraph. And between an organizational chart, telegraph, and then the typewriter, oh my gosh, and then we could typewrite things. And so this created, from that, we created this committee structure that we use now. And so that was kind of a revolution. And so if you look at a lot of organizations, if you were in the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts, if you were a member of any of the civic organizations, a lot of them have a start date in the 1910s when these tools really blew up. And so what was a great idea in the 1910s is maybe not the best solution in the 2020s.
Yes. I agree 100%. Now, we've talked, you know, especially with our area, and you mentioned you've been to the northern tier of PA, which I love. It's beautiful country, but to be frank, the northern tier of our state is just slowly dying, and that's the only word I can think of. Dying meaning population going down, fewer economic opportunities, beautiful country, lots of deer. All right, maybe not steers for us. We have more deer than people in some places. All right. And it's, I know some folks up there are just, they're not scratching their heads. They're kind of banging the walls like, we don't know what to do here. Now, just a general question, because Becky, it sounds like you have connections like in all directions. In general, how are rural areas in our country doing right now? Because at some point this becomes a political issue, God forbid. How are rural areas doing? Is it different maybe in some places compared to other places? What do you think?
Absolutely. It is. It's different. Each small town is different. And so you might find one small town that's doing really well and its neighbor is not doing as well. We are seeing more of accumulation into the larger small towns, so the little population centers that are, you know, above 5 to 10,000 draw in a lot of the resources, and it's pulling it out of the towns under 1,000, under 500. It's really, and then it's variable just by region. So some regions are, you know, amenity heavy and people like to travel there, and so they go and visit, and so this provides another resource. So each community has its own unique set of challenges and its own unique set of assets, but what we found with the survey is we have a lot in common. And over 2,000 people have told us about this, and so we've got a pretty good idea that, you know, declining population is a huge challenge. Dealing with the old way thinking, you know, let's have another committee, that is another giant challenge. Retaining our young people, finding enough volunteers to get things done, and, you know, a lot of people point directly to money, but people don't tell us money is the challenge because we're rural and we're used to scrounging up enough money to get just enough done. But what we can't do is fight against the fact that we have fewer and fewer people. And so that turns into the larger challenge that is really in common to a lot of rural areas. One of the towns that we worked with in Pennsylvania was Tyonesta. Tyonesta in Forest County. A lot of people have camps up there. And they did this really smart thing. A whole block of their downtown burned probably 20 years ago. And Tyonesta, 500 people, I think, only had three blocks of downtown, so losing one whole side of that was like an enormous challenge for them. But their economic development group took that empty lot and put these cute little sheds on it and made the little fronts look like little downtown buildings. And that's like this tiny business incubator. There's like a barbecue joint that comes over, and there's a bakery. The winery from the countryside, actually, that's their in-town selling spot. There's an artist. There's a rock shop. There's who knows what all's in there right now. There's a lady that sews. And so there are these little tiny businesses from within the community and from surrounding areas. And because they're all together, then they have that critical mass that, like, now it's interesting enough to go visit. It's called The Village. It's so cute and so much fun to go visit and go to each of those little businesses and find a little something. And so it's a much better answer than leaving that block empty. And, of course, they couldn't attract a developer to build new buildings on it because they're, you know, little town surrounded by national forest and river and foothills. So it's that kind of creative answer to our challenges that allows us to have hope and to make the best of where we are.
Now, we have about a minute and a half till we have to take a break. Who came up with the idea for Tyonesta there, Becky? I mean, did they or did some outside person? Where'd the idea come from?
That came through, that was their own people. As I hear the story, there's a woman named Julia McCrae who is not related to me. She told me the story. Their economic development and industrial development group had the lot. They came up with the idea of putting sheds. Julia's an artist, and she's like, can we make them pretty like downtown businesses? So that's where the idea for the little fronts came from. And so they came up with it themselves, and they just did it.
All right.
For about $50,000 is what went into it. That was the entire site work, buying all the sheds, dressing them up. That's a really good investment in their community.
Okay, before we take a break, did government get involved in any stretch here, Becky, or was it just the locals who did it?
Well, technically, I'm sure the Industrial Development Authority Economic Development Group is a quasi-governmental at least, and they used USDA Rural Development funding to do it because it was a development project. So as far as I know, that's it.
But the whole thing was only $50,000.
Yeah, it was 10 years ago, and it's been going for 10 years. So, wow, I mean, that's a great return.
Even 10 years ago, $50,000 is a fantastic return. I asked about government because it just, now I'm a bit jaundiced here. It seems like whenever government gets involved, prices go up.
Yeah, I can see that. They used, you know, they bought the sheds from a local vendor. They used a local carpenter from the area to dress them up. That helped hold some prices down. And so, it's not bad to have government involved in a way that helps support your idea. It's just a mistake to like start from you know, too much.
All right.
It's a balance.
Yeah, amen.
Now, again, our guest is Becky McCray. Now, folks, check out this website, and especially if you're in, how do I call it, put this, an affected area. Maybe you've had some discussions in your town or your area and so on. Saveyour.town is the website. And we're going to take a break here. We'll come back. Some more questions for Becky, maybe some more solutions that we'll throw out there. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox, and we'll come back and do that talking right after this.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Discover a whole new world right here in your own backyard. Happy Valley is where you'll find everything from beautiful outdoor spaces to fantastic shopping and nightlife to the Central PA Tasting Trail. And you're already here. So plan your staycation and look for insider information at dispatch.happyvalley.com. Remember, whether it's you and your family or out-of-town guests enjoying the things we take for granted, lines are shorter and rates are lower in the middle of the week. Your next adventure begins now at happyvalley.com.
Plan your midweek getaway today and find lodging at happyvalley.com. Explore dining destinations, interesting attractions, historic sites, sports, shopping and boutiques, caves, and the Central PA Tasting Trail. Our hotels, inns, and bed and breakfasts are ready for your visit. Plus, rates and wait times are less during the week. Your adventures can also include hiking trails, biking, geocaching, and walking driving tours, too. Look for insider information at dispatch.happyvalley.com. We're in the center of it all. Plan your adventures today at happyvalley.com.
Do you have everything for your next get-together, party, or event?
Did somebody say something about a party?
Let the 64 Beer Store take care of all your party needs with great beverages and snacks. With over 400 beverage offerings, they have all of your beer, wine, and soda choices in one location. They also have kegs for the bigger events, too.
The 64 Beer Store, 1/2 mile north of Interstate 80, Lamar, 6102 Nittany Valley Drive, or call them at 570-726-8687.
The Lesser Lumber Classic is Central PA's premier all-star football game. Presented by Lesser Lumber is brought to you by Fort Sports Emporium, Lycan's Market, Glen O'Hara Baker Incorporated, Galen Drival Bliss, Brothers Pizza Belfont, the Central Hall Farm Store, and Lesser Lumber. The Lesser Lumber Classic will be held at State College's Memorial Field on Father's Day, beginning at 5 p.m. exclusively on
Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Brothers Pizza in downtown Belfont wants to congratulate all the graduating seniors from Belfont Area High School and Bald Eagle Area High School. The education of our young people are important for our future growth in the community. When planning for your graduation party, count on Brothers Pizza to take the stress off of your plate and let us do the cooking. Call ahead at 355-5581. That's 355-5581. Brothers Pizza, 102 North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfont.
The State College Spikes are hitting the field all summer long. Enjoy fun, affordable family entertainment as the future of baseball is on display in Happy Valley. Spike teams have something for everyone at the new look Mettler Field at Leblano Park. From great giveaways to fantastic deals, from special appearances to plenty of fireworks, all the way through September 3rd. For tickets, call 814-272-1711 or get the schedule and buy and download at statecollegespikes.com.
Here's the WeatherBell.com Foxcast. Another cool day today with changeable skies, including sunshine. Can't rule out a passing sprinkle. The high 67. And mainly clear tonight. The low 50 to 54. And tomorrow, plenty of sunshine, becoming warmer. High temperature 78. Thursday, some sunshine and quite warm.
This is WeatherBell.com Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi.
Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox.
We'll be right back. It is our Tuesday edition of Let's Talk here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jeff and Scott with you. Becky McRae joining us on the phone line this morning. And we will have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment today.
Mention again Becky's website, saveyour.town. Saveyour.town. Interesting stuff on there. Now, Becky, let's back up here a little bit, I guess. I was going to ask this, and at one point in the last segment, you were kind of tossing out some numbers and stuff. What's the definition of a small town? Is there a definition of a small town from your perspective?
Oh, my gosh, there's so many definitions of small towns, and they don't all agree, of course. We don't define it. If you feel like your town is a small town, then, you know, come to saveyour.town and find resources for you. And we actually receive people from neighborhoods in larger communities that are working on their neighborhood. So it's not like there's a hard line for me. We always put every idea that we think of through the filter of, would this work in a town of 1,000 people or fewer? And if it doesn't work for that, then we're not going to share that idea, or we'll modify it in some way so that it would work in that size of a community.
All right.
There are definitions of, 2,500 used to be kind of the dividing line between a rural area and a small town, or, you know, and so they would call them cities. The Census Bureau would at 2,500, and you're like, that's not really a big city, but... kind of the dividing line where people start being really thinking of themselves as a small town in my area. Now, you can let me know what the Pennsylvania definition is here. Kind of if you're under 10,000, you really think of yourself as a small town. The under 20,000, also, you know, it's you're starting to think of yourself as a big town around here. You're kind of important. And, you know, over 20,000, then they're like giant big cities to me. I'm in a town of 30. Oh my gosh, we're not even a town. And so it's everybody's got different definitions, and micropolitan and nanopolitan and picopolitan, and, you know, we're not going to go into all that.
That's interesting. Now, State College is more than 20,000, so that makes State College a big city.
To me.
Yeah.
If you go downtown, State College is a big city
big,
now.
And big
built
city.
Up. Yes. It's
we won't even
good.
Talk about Philadelphia. All right. Holy smokes.
Well, and those city people, then they look at State College and go, that's just a small town. And you're like, man, we're something.
Yeah.
Now, in cities, of course, there are neighborhoods, usually. The blah, yeah. blah neighborhood or the blah, blah neighborhood and so on. And mm-hmm. certainly inside of neighborhoods, they want to do this or they want to do that. That would yeah. make them a small town. So some of the ideas, Becky, that you ladies are talking about would apply to them, I suppose, right?
It does. And we hear from people, North Tulsa neighborhood in Tulsa, and then... But then other places we hear from people that they're using our ideas within neighborhood associations or small groups, or just they want to do something within their cul-de-sac. You know, whatever your neighborhood is, there are ideas that you can use. And, you know, 99% of the best things you can do to build a better area to live in, those don't require anyone's permission. You can just decide that you and your neighbors are going to have a cookout and hang out on the driveways, and you can do that in a big city, and it's fine. And, you know, your little cul-de-sac can then become a vibrant neighborhood as you connect with your neighbors. Being a good neighbor works whether you're in a big city, a small neighborhood, or a small town.
See, now there's a thought, and we've mentioned this, I think, on the show before. How do I phrase this? Being neighborly is not the same as it was in the past. People are so, this is an opinion, people are so disconnected today that they don't mix with their neighbors. They don't do anything with their neighbors. They barely leave their house unless they go to work or something like that. Now, am I right on that, Becky? What we would remember as being neighborly, that just seems to be out the window anymore in so many places. Or am I wrong there?
Well, you know, absolutely the way that our neighborhoods are set up, especially in a suburban neighborhood where you have like cul-de-sacs and just houses, house after house after house that are built separately, this is not really conducive to making it easily to get to know your neighbors. And even in my little town of 30 people, I don't know everyone in my town. There's a family all the way at the north end. I don't know who they are, but I can find out. I think that the answer to that is that each of us has the opportunity to make time to meet our neighbors. Now, you can't wait for your neighbors to come be neighborly to you and complain that there's no neighborliness. If you want more neighborliness, you start and you hang out more in your front yard, hang out on your driveway. Do it when the weather's nice, you know, make it fun. Build and set up your yard, at least, as a place where people can hang out. And then start going and meeting people. Start by finding out people's names. This is a great first step to better neighborliness. It's just to find out who they are, and then to try to find out a little about them. And you do that with conversations. It doesn't have to be huge, and you don't need permission.
Now, Becky, if I'm hearing you right, though, you're saying, like, to look up from our cell phone?
I know.
And look around and see what's actually in front of you?
It's a crazy idea.
Huh.
Yeah.
And it starts with you. Now don't get too high and mighty here.
Oh, no. Believe me. I have the mirror firmly in front of my face as I'm saying this. No, it is. But it really is. It is one of the things. And, you know, I take our dog for a walk in the morning and the evening, most mornings and most evenings. And I will intentionally, usually, unless I have a call that I'm waiting for, I'm like, I am going to leave the cell phone here. Now, there are days where I'm like, okay, I'm taking it with me. But usually I leave it. And it is amazing when you are out and about and you don't have the device attached to your hand, what all you can observe, see, notice. And yes, occasionally we'll see other human beings. It's like, hey, how's it going?
How are you?
How's your day going? I have
a question about that. Do you find your dog to be a good tool to introducing yourself to other people? Like, do people want to talk to the dog, right? Like, does that not provide an opportunity for conversation?
Absolutely. No, there's no question about it. And I think, I don't know, we've talked about this often. It's that human interaction. And one of the things, and I realize some of this stuff does occur even in bigger cities and stuff. You'll have, you know, parades and whatnot. But I do think having those, you know, the barbecue cookouts at the fire hall or the, you know, we have a lot of firemen's carnivals around here. Those types of events, it does bring a connectedness that you cannot find on the computer or the cell phone. There's just that, again, human interaction. I realize in many ways we're more connected with the world because of the internet and all of that, but you're not getting the, hey, how are you? And you see the facial reaction. It's like, oh, good. Okay, what happened? That isn't good. Well, you know, and then you get the story of what happened to that person that day. It's just, I don't know, being able to actually have human interaction, and we've talked about this often on the show. I'm not a big fan of, like, the automatic checkouts and stuff at the grocery store. I like that just little, small, casual human interaction. Do you want a plastic or a paper bag? I'll take plastic. Thank you. How's your day going? I like those little interactions, and I think they're important. I really do, to the overall fabric of a community.
I agree.
Do they have the internet in your town, Becky?
Oh, my gosh. There's fiber running in front of my house.
Wait a minute. There's only 30 people in your town. You have fiber?
Yeah.
I had fiber. I said there's fiber running in front of my house. They laid it in on a grant, and it serves the church primarily. So I don't have fiber internet, but I do have high-speed internet. I'm really lucky because I'm, like, you know, half a block from the phone switch, which is all the way across town, by the way.
Okay, then I'm way more remote than you, Becky, I suppose. I don't know. Now, Becky, I warned you of one I was going to ask you about, because we've had news coverage on this here lately and ongoing, and it's just volunteer fire companies, at least where we are really struggling, either for members or for money or for both. And it's, I think some of the, they're not going to close, I hope, but there's been talking, you know, about consolidating and stuff like that. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's not good. So when it comes to volunteer fire companies, Becky, let's kind of throw the challenge out to you. What can they do? What can they do to change the game instead of struggling along as they've been doing?
And it's not just there. It's everywhere. Everywhere that relies on rural firefighters, they are struggling to find enough people to staff the fire companies. So I hear you. I have four things. The first one is to acknowledge their work publicly. You need, this is a starting point. We know how to celebrate our volunteers with certificates and social media posts and newspaper articles and get them on the radio and recognize people. Hold thank you events. Actually make sure that you are deliberately going out of your way to thank you, your volunteers. And I say that first because we don't actually do it as much as we should. The second part is to take as much as possible off of their shoulders. So is there some part of the job that someone else could help with? Are there things that we could turn over to another volunteer with less training? Is maybe a former volunteer or an older firefighter can come back and assist with some of the things that you do not need to weigh down those firefighters with those additional smaller tasks if there's any way that someone can help them? And there's a lot of paperwork involved, and there's a lot of other things that if you can find some way that they don't have to do that, it's going to make it just a little bit easier. The third piece, and one that's a big piece, is the training. There's a ton of training required for volunteer firefighters. So how can you make that training itself less of a burden? Can you do more training remotely? Can you find ways to train each other? Can it be held right before something else that the volunteers would also like to attend as a benefit? Can you add anything to make that training less of a burden? And a fourth piece is to make sure that they can capitalize in a reasonable way on their work experience. Can their training be part of college credit? Andrew Button from Nova Scotia told me about firefighter groups there who work with the local college so that their trainings add up to community college credit hours. And then they also help them to find volunteer firefighter-specific scholarships to help pay for college credit, and then show them how to frame that volunteer work as work experience on their scholarship applications. And that could also apply to how you feature your work experience on your resume. So make sure you're acknowledging, take as much off of their shoulders as you can, make the training less of a burden, and find benefits for them for the training that they must take. These are four ideas that we collected from other areas, and so I just wanted to share those with you. But I know it's a struggle, and it's not going to ever not be a struggle as long as we have rural communities.
Yeah, I guess I wonder or worry about young people today that the idea of volunteering just, no, I want to get paid. I want to get paid. How much am I getting paid for this? Maybe it's always been that way, Becky, but it just seems more and more these days. Volunteerism, nah, I'm not interested. I want to get paid. Now, am I wrong on that, Becky? I seemingly see this all the time.
You know, the reason they want to get paid is because we're stuffing them into that boring committee structure, and we are forcing people to do stuff that nobody wants to do. That's a starting point, right? If we want you to volunteer, but we're going to have you push a broom, or we want you to volunteer, but you've got to serve a 3-year term and it's part of our program. Like, okay, if you want me on your committee that's going to take 3 years, you're going to have to pay me too, because I don't want to do it anymore. There is a real societal shift from committees and formal structures to just activities. And so how can we structure the things that we have traditionally done as volunteers? How can we reform it around what people are interested in today? Sometimes we're just hanging on to an old idea that's the same old idea that we've been doing forever, and we want kids these days to do it, but they have to do it our way, the way we did it when we grew up. And I don't blame them for not being excited about that either. How can you make space for people to add their own part of it in their own way, especially like our traditional festivals. You know, okay, so we've always done the Lima Bean Festival the way we've always done the Lima Bean Festival, and nobody, like, we can't get volunteers for it. Well, can we move aside and say, what would you like to add? When my colleague Deb was a Chamber of Commerce director in Iowa, she ran a big festival, and they made space for the church kids wanted to do human foosball. Now, this is, how do you even do human foosball? Deb didn't know. She's just like, okay, well, here's an empty space. Go ahead and do it. So they didn't ask to get paid to do that because it was what they wanted to do. So how can we realize the opportunities to let people do the parts they want to do and not just try to force them into the mold of the way we've always done it?
Yep, I love that.
Folks, there you go. Yep. There it is, all right? Unfortunately, we're out of time, Becky, but I tell you what, I really appreciate your time today. Again,
terrific.
The website is saveyour.town. Folks, check out this website. Earlier, Becky, you mentioned what you call the idea-friendly method. That's on there. You know, sort of what we've been talking about here for a while now, but it's a cool website, and the ideas and information on there I think are great, and I know that your friend Deb I think is writing a book. What book is she writing?
It is called From Possibilities to Reality, and it is a collection of ideas to help you save your town in a very idea-friendly way. It's super practical. It is all these very doable ideas so that you don't read it and go, well, that's good for them. You go, this is something we could do. And the book is written. She is in the crowdfunding phase of getting the printing done. She has her designer lined out. So self-publishing is definitely come around to a very professional kind of thing as well. So we're very excited to see that it's going to be like a workbook style thing so that you get this. We expect you to look at these ideas and work on them. So Deb has done such an amazing job with this book, and I am so excited for it. You'll have to have her on.
I can see we got Deb's info. We definitely would like to have her on sometime. So, Becky, we appreciate your time today. We'll let you get back to the cattle there or whatever. and thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you both. I had a great time.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Saveyour.town. Worth a check, no matter where you are.
Love it.